Blog Talk Radio.
$100 down to reserve your seat. Then you can make monthly payments on that trip. Contact Valerie Champion at travelchampionstyle@gmail.com or call 678-949-1416.
And good morning, everyone. This is your host, Celeste Duckworth of Vertical Live Radio. Appreciate everyone who's part of our program today and also to our faithful supporters of Vertical Live Radio. And the music you heard, and you'll get to hear some more of that at the end of the program if you want to hear it, is Take a Look by music producer Marcus Gameface Boyd. Marcus, thank you again. We have a great lineup of independent musicians who donate music to us to play on the radio, and we really do appreciate them. So today we have a great program. Again, we have Global I Am, which is Global International African Arts Movement. The co-purveyor is Patrick Anthony Howell. We also have our featured guest star, sculptor Vinnie Bagwell. And her pursuit of artistic excellence is grounded in a desire to use sculpture as a visual language that tells a story. And then we also have locally painter Janita Landrum of Phoenix, Arizona, who has just returned from doing an exhibition in Ohio called The Beauty of Undefined, Visible and Invisible Black Women. So I'm so happy to have all of them on the show today, and we're going to open up, and just for those who are listening, if you have to leave early, that's great, because this program is taped. You can always come back to the link and listen to the program, and please share. Thank you. So good morning, everybody. I see everyone has called in.
Good morning.
I'm so thrilled to have you here. Good morning. Good morning. So
good morning.
Great
good morning.
Saturday. Good, good. Great Saturday in Arizona, since we're in our winter month now, so we're not having to deal with the 120 degree weather. So it's just every day is fantastic now in the winter time. So today our program is topic is art and the pulse of the nation. And so I'm happy to have everyone here today. And so first I want to do is I would like Patrick to kind of give us a little bit of information about exactly what is Global International African Arts Movement.
Sure. And what a pleasure to be on your show again, Celeste, and thank you so much for your continued interest in not only what we're doing, but moreover, black arts, and being able to create a platform where our voices can come out and we can basically define ourselves. And so I would say, first and foremost, that is precisely what Global I Am, or Global International African Arts Movement, is all about. It's about us defining ourselves. A lot of times in popular culture, or whatever you want to call it, Hollywood industrial complex, there's a lot of caricatures of ourselves that come out from those that are not us. that are basically holding the purse strings. And then there's folks like, you know, Vinnie Bagwell or Nana Boo Hammond or Leslie Ann Brown, who you've had on the show previously, who are doing an extraordinary job of representing not only ourselves but our ancestors, the diversity of our perspectives. And, you know, like I said, to borrow a phrase from Marvin Mills, who is the co-purveyor of the Global I Am and who is currently traveling the world, he's been out to Africa and Asia, you know, we define ourselves. And it's really us loving ourselves and you know, stopping at nothing to be precisely who we are. And when other people seek to define us, not so much, you know, fighting them, just ignoring them and just being who we are at our highest possible frequency.
Well, thank you, Patrick. I appreciate that. And I appreciate having Global I Am on and as a part of Vertical Live Radio, because it's giving our listeners and those that we promote to a great introduction to African art and to the, you know, and to how art is really also creating the stories of who we really are. So I really appreciate having you on again.
Indeed.
And our next guest is sculptor Vinnie Bagwell. How are you today, Vinnie?
Very well. How are you? Wishing I was in Arizona, but I'm good. How about you?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm great. And, Vinnie, I am so happy to have you on. I'm really enjoying your art. It's a little new for me. Can you give our guests a little bit of information about you and where you're from?
Okay. I am an untutored artist. I grew up in New York, in Westchester County, and, you know, after college, I moved to Yonkers, and Yonkers is the fourth largest city in New York State, it's about 200,000 people, and it has tremendous history, and so when I first began sculpting, you know, this is in the mid-90s, 93, 94, you know, I looked around for examples of work that, you know, I wanted to be inspired by, and there was nothing. You know, there just wasn't any public art about African Americans, our culture, anything like that. And so I started home. Ella Fitzgerald grew up in Yonkers, and so I was lucky enough to have an administration at that time that gave me the opportunity to create my first public artwork, which turned out to be the first commission of a contemporary African-American woman in the country, you know, to be commissioned by municipality. And so, you know, I didn't even mean to be groundbreaking, you know, but it turned out that way. And, of course, this is before the Internet, so it took me a while before you know, I got my second one, and so, of course, you know, in the early 2000s, I created a sculpture for Hofstra of Frederick Douglass, and, of course, now with the Internet, you know, it's easier to learn about calls and things like that, but, again, it's a competitive arena. You have to be not only talented, but you have to be creative with your ideas, because it's usually the best idea that wins. It's not always about the best artwork. The question is, what's the best idea for any particular site? And then the other thing that I think is important is civic engagement, you know, talking to the community where the artwork is going to go, and, you know, just getting input and feedback from the community, because there's nothing worse than putting up public art that people hate. And so, of course, that kind of brings us current, you know, because now communities are looking around at the public art that they have, and they're realizing that it no longer reflects the diversity of the community. And some of it is just plain propaganda, and, you know, people no longer want to acquiesce to that. So lately, you know, in the news, you're hearing about, you know, cities that are removing public art that, for instance, represents Civil War heroes, you know, because a lot of that was put up as propaganda, and the story is inaccurate. And so, you know, public art has become very powerful because it gives you an opportunity, number one, to tell a story, but it also reflects the value, you know, of a community. And so, you know, whenever you go someplace and you look at the kind of art they have in the community, it tells you a lot about that community.
And I have, well, a couple of things. I didn't know Yonkers was the fourth largest city in New York. So that was really interesting. And I also have had a chance to really do some more research, and it was just really interesting, the project you did on the enslaved Africans' rain garden, because it also had a lot of history with that.
Well, that's, again, the wonderful thing about Yonkers, you know, some things here change, some things don't. And it's a city that has 4 miles of waterfront property on the Hudson River, you know, which is absolutely majestic with the Palisades and whatnot. And so the city is well into the process of revitalization. We have one of the largest daylightings in the country. A daylighting is when you dig up a river and relight it. So, for instance, we have the Sawmill River here that they are daylighting. If you just Google daylighting, you'll see what it is. It's digging up a river that was buried 100 years ago and, you know, making it be visible again, you know, to beautify the downtown. But the interesting thing about the process of revitalization, which also sometimes goes under the moniker of gentrification, because the new buildings are not necessarily affordable, you know, although here we do have an affordable housing program where for every new building, there's 15% that has to be set aside for low to moderate income people. But the point of it is you have a whole lot of new people coming to the town that don't know the history. And so here we have the Phillips Manor Hall, which is the oldest standing building in the county. And it turns out that the people who built it were slave traders in the late 1600s. More importantly, the enslaved Africans that lived in this house were among the first to be freed by law in the country 64 years before the Emancipation Proclamation. So that's what made the story important, because it's valuable, technically national history, that isn't in the curriculum. It's not widely known. And it's one of those stories, you know, if you don't bring it to light, it could very well be lost because nobody's paying attention. Right. So the Enslaved Africans Rain Garden is a significant project by the sheer size of it. It's five life-size people, which represent the breadth of slavery. You know, many of the enslaved Africans were youth, children, you know, and then, of course, you know, elders. And then, of course, bringing to light the fact that New York slavery was very different than your iconic Southern slavery, you know. So we're talking, you know, early in the slave trade. So this is before the Europeans came, you know, to the Americas. So enslaved Africans were trained here in New York to do, you know, major jobs such as carpentry and, you know, blacksmithing. And they had all these amazing occupations that they did to build really the foundation, you know, for the Empire State. And then later, the Europeans came and, you know, slave laws changed the complexion of slavery. So, you know, it's important to bring that to light as well, because people think that New York was where enslaved Africans were trying to free themselves, and New York was financing slavery, insuring the boats and all kinds of, you know, economic development adventures. So, you know, you want people to understand the story more deeply because you can understand it better. Change the subject. Most recently, I saw a video on CNN where they're showing in Liberia people being enslaved today. And so, you know, people think slavery is about yesterday. It's like, oh, no. It's happening now. And if we don't speak up about it and defend those people over there, it could just as easily happen here again. Don't think it can't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's very true. But we're gonna hold it right there for a minute, Vinny, because I will come back to that. I want to introduce Janita Landrum. And Janita, it's really interesting. I met Janita. We both were working for the College School District here in Arizona. And Janita, you just came back. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and, you know, here in Arizona? It's been what it's been like to be a Black artist thriving in Arizona.
Okay. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Now, I'm going to apologize before I get started. I live at the mountain, and so my phone does drop. And so if I do drop, I'll dial back in. Is that okay, Celeste? Okay, very good.
That's fine. That's
well,
fine.
Good. Yeah, I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, my God. Once I get talking, for some reason it just drops. But good morning to you all. You know what? I'm finding Patrick also and you and Vinny really interesting. I'm sitting here listening. It's like, man, I don't even know if I want to talk now. I just want to listen, you know. But anyway, I'm Janita, and I've been back in Phoenix this time for about 10 years. And, yes, Celeste and I had met. We worked at the college. And I lived in Phoenix. I was born in Michigan, in Jackson, Michigan, and went to school in Detroit. Started out very, very young of knowing that I loved art. I loved coloring. I could do that every day, all day. My mother was, you know, she didn't consider herself an artist, but now, you know, she is actually passed on. I think about her, and she really was probably the first artist that I knew, you know. And, you know, people say that I'm a painter, but for my mother, I would say that she was a mixed media artist. And so she was probably my first introduction to art. I do remember people always ask me, well, how long have you been doing art or when did you start? I can remember always loving art and doing art, but I probably won my first art show in the fourth grade. So from that point, they had asked me to create it was kind of like a poster on, you know, some place you'd never been. So I created a poster on Alaska, which, you know, I lived in Michigan, felt like Alaska, but I've never been. And so this poster that I did, this piece of art I did, it won the contest, and immediately my teachers took it, and I never seen it again. But I did revisit it at a later date, and I can kind of get to that. And so from fourth grade, I've been bitten by the art bug, you know. Didn't know, I guess I never would have thought that I would still be doing art today. It wasn't heavily encouraged in my family because they wanted you to get a job, you know. We were in the Industrial Revolution, and, you know, we were just finding our way. And I was from a big family that didn't have a lot of money. And so their focus was you laying down a foundation and get a job. Well, I knew I was going to get a job, but I probably didn't get the job that they wanted me to get. So I went and I studied at Center for Creative Studies, College of Art and Design, and didn't make it through there. Wasn't prepared. My family hadn't prepared me. I wasn't prepared to do that, so I dropped out. I did go back and, you know, finish up school at a later date. But by the time, you know, I was in high school and going into college, I already knew how to draw. But that was basically using a pencil, probably using what they would say kind of traditional African-American art, you know, it was figurative, you know, it was faces, it was human, which, you know, I still do today, you know, but, you know, kind of have stretched out since then. So I taught myself. So people says, well, you're trained. Well, I started out self-taught like most of us do. You know, the school just gave me maybe some more words and some more understanding, but by the time I got there, I pretty much already knew the fundamentals of art just by being self-taught. from school, I decided I wanted to do art. You know, it was kind of a rough road. I ended up going to a white institution, which, you know, that is one of the reasons why I felt I needed to be in the institution for students that came through there like me, that looked like me, which is very, very few. Mm-hmm. But whatever ones that came through there, I was going to hold on to them because I did not, you know, being in a white institution and being an artist, I did not get that love at all. If anything, they would tell you, you're never going to make it. You're not good because my images were black. And I think that experience is kind of what it has done is kind of propelled me probably my whole life on doing what I'm doing now, you know. As Celeste said, there's a lot in the middle of that, the beginning and now, but I thought that was a good segue into what I'm doing now. And so as Celeste had said, I just came back from Columbus, Ohio, probably about 2 years ago. Maybe it's been burning on me for a while. I have been a gallery owner of several galleries here in Phoenix, in Columbus, Ohio. Anywhere I go, I'm going to set up a space. And those spaces came out of the fact that nobody was showing me, you know. I was getting some shows, and I've gotten shows, but I felt I wasn't really getting all the shows and all the hits that I really need to push me out there. So I opened up my own spaces. And if they weren't going to push me out there, then I'm going to open up my own space and get out there myself. And that's what I did. So saying that is that I just came back from Columbus, Ohio, about 2 years ago. I started looking at, okay, I'm back in Phoenix, and this kind of goes with Celeste's asked me to talk about. I'm back in Phoenix. You know, I have, you know, an extensive track record, but just wasn't getting the hits, and couldn't understand why it was happening, and maybe I still don't, but I said, okay, again, I'm not waiting for them to launch me as an artist or for them to say whatever they want to say, you're good or you're not good. I wasn't waiting. So I decided that what I would do was to do a traveling exhibition, and I wanted this exhibition to be women. We're still in a lot of ways we're still at the bottom of the totem pole in the art world. You know, I've seen, you know, they bring men through here, but I hadn't seen a featured exhibit of African American women. So with that kind of that void, you know, I decided what I would do is start organizing, looking for people that maybe felt like I did or wasn't getting the opportunities or needed opportunities to come aboard to this journey that we are on. And it's been really quite wonderful. I have funded it with my money because I'm looking for a great sponsor. So if you guys know any sponsors that want a great show, please send them to me. But so is my thought. You know, I've sponsored it. I selected the artists. They come from all over the country. And the show is just starting to move. We've already opened up in the San Francisco, Oakland area, and we got rave reviews. And then I just came back from Columbus, Ohio, rave reviews again, you know. So it's a really beautiful show. And so in my thinking, I want to do this show, and I titled it hashtag undefined visible invisible black woman. And that's where we started. Great. And so we meet, you know, a couple times a year.
Mm-hmm.
We meet a couple times a year, all of the artists. There's a core group of artists that actually travel with the show. And then every place we go, what we do is we bring in the local artists. So to make sure that we give everybody the opportunities, I am really serious about opportunities for black folks, but I'm also serious about art. And so with that, you know, coming together a couple times a year, what we do is we do workshops, we talk about being an artist, what makes you an artist, so that when this show takes off, and it's taking off, that they will be ready to answer these questions that people are going to have simply based on the fact that we're black and they think we don't know. You know, so we're preparing, all of these.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. Are you incorporated? Have you gotten your 501c3?
I have not.
I'm going to recommend that you do that because you might try partnering with perhaps your local arts council or some local arts organization that already has it. But because you've already done so much groundwork, you have a history, this is a timely point in your process to incorporate and file for your 501c3, which will make you eligible for funding. There's a lot of money out there for what you're doing. I mean, early on, before I started doing public art, I discovered that there are pools of money for just about everything. Foundationcenter.org, you will find so many, all of the nation's calls or information for grants is on that website. And so what you do is you read the guidelines. Ideally, you want to have your own 501c3 because then you can manage, administrate your own funding. You don't have to, partner with somebody else and having them pull your purse strings. So, Google how to create a nonprofit 501c3. It's not really hard because you already have some background. What you do is you incorporate and then immediately file for your 501c3, the short form. It's 4 pages as opposed to 27. It's not hard to do. I got mine in 3 weeks. And that makes you funding for all kinds of money. Money from your city, money from your state, federal funding. There's so much money for what you're doing. And if you can just articulate the value of what you're doing, as your vision and your mission, you'll find that you can get funding from local corporations. I don't know who's down there where you are, but I'm in Westchester County, and we've got major folks here like, Pepsi and Heineken and whatever, Entergy. And you can go to them and say, I've read your guidelines for corporate giving. We're a nonprofit. We need this much money to do this. You shouldn't be using your own money anymore. You're established.
Well, I agree with you, and
I
agree. I appreciate that knowledge because I agree with you. I've looked at it and actually says, well, I need to do this because I do need sponsor and I do need the funding. And in the meantime, I'm looking at maybe partnering until it comes through, but I would rather have my own so I can do it my own way.
Look at it. It's not inexpensive. I think it's like $75 to incorporate and $400 to apply for the 501c3.
Right.
But again, if you have a good group of people, you just really need your executive board.
Correct.
So president, vice president, secretary, treasurer. If you pick the right people, how we did it is we all put our money in, so that no one person had to foot the bill. And then when we got our funding, we gave everybody their money back. It was an investment. But I'm just simply saying, what you might do is start looking around, and seeing who's in your town and then, checking to see what their corporate giving guidelines are about and start making friends with people who can sponsor the things that you're doing. You should be able to find funding for everything you're doing. It may take you a solid year to ramp up because you've got to wait for funding cycles, but a lot of folks give money immediately, it depends. And then same thing with your city. You may want to, get with your local city councilman to find out what is the vision for the city, and you align yourself with your city because what you're doing is improving quality of life. You're bringing culture and arts to your community, and that has a value as well. So your city should be supporting you. Ask them if they have any community development funding. Here in Yonkers, have federal funding that comes from HUD every year. And so you should be someone that's eligible for that.
That's great.
I was going to say, because one of my questions to you, Janita, is because we, Phoenix only in the last couple of years started doing a serious call out to artists for different projects they have, but I still read that a lot of artists who come here or the ones that are here, Phoenix is still very underfunded, and it's still very experimental and exclusionary.
Well, your
evolving.
Whole work cry is about diversity. It's about diversity. That's
right.
You know, really look at the demographic of your community. Look at what's missing. Look at what gap you fill, and that's what you you know, may be your strength. So, and the other thing is don't be intimidated by grant applications. People are like, I don't know how to write a grant. It's like, well, you know what? You learn by doing. Mm-hmm. And so you just start looking at applications and looking at what they're asking for. And if you're not prepared, if you don't have it, get it. You know, work, make that be, you know, your focus for the upcoming year. It's like, I'm going to get myself straight so that I can be eligible for funding. Mm-hmm. And at some point, as the administrator, you pay yourself.
Exactly. You know, I totally agree with you now. I spent some time in Columbus, and they had a very supportive town. They had very supportive art commissions. The mayor was supportive. And, I mean, I skyrocketed there. You know, I did. I have wrote grants before, and I have received grants, but they've been individual grants. But I haven't wrote any for this project, so that is my next move. Now, comparing Columbus to Phoenix – is that Phoenix is a little harder nut to crack, you know, but I'm doing, you know, I'm already in the process of doing what you're suggesting of making those friends, figuring out where the money is at, you know, and I'm ready to go to the mayor, you know, to say, okay, what is this? What are we doing here?
Start with the person who's responsible for your district. I assume you guys have city council down there.
We do.
Start with the person.
Well, yeah.
Start with your city council and your legislator and make them aware of what you're doing and then ask them, say, where's
the
money? And they'll tell you.
Well, the thing that we have in Phoenix that we have to break through, and I'm sure that, Janita, the thing that we have to break through and that we're breaking through slowly is that Phoenix really, when you look at Arizona, it was really settled by, and it really not as much, but it was really a very transient state. And most of your people here were your older people. White people moved here to retire. And so now we're starting to have people that are moving in from other places that are used to the culture. They're coming from back east. They're coming from California. They're used to the culture. And we're starting to see that with these individuals coming in. And so, you know, we've had two progressive mayors, I'd say, that you know, are looking at more cultural diversity and implementing into that. And so it is a little bit tougher to crack than
it is
most places,
especially
with the African American community.
Because it's not happening,
that's
my point. Because it's not it's not really happening full force now, you guys are at the threshold. If you see a bandwagon, it's going to be late. Everybody's going to be doing what you're trying to do. So you're at the you're at the threshold. And, again, learn how to talk the talk. For every community, it's really always about economic development. You know, bringing people to your city that normally wouldn't come, bringing people to a district that normally wouldn't come. You're attracting people and their money to a particular area. And while they're in that area, they'll have lunch, they'll drink wine, they'll stop by the post office. Oh, let's get them to the hardware store. You're bringing economic development to your area. So your city is going to care about that. And then also, too, understand art makes a place livable. So, again, you appeal to their interest, and you say, because we're making the city better, more people are going to want to live here. And so that's an investment. You know, help us keep making it better and better and better so that when people come here, they'll think this place is attractive. And even if they don't want to live here, they'll want to visit here. That's worth money.
And you know what, I
don't sleep that. That is worth money. And I mean, one of my conversations with a lot of individuals I meet coming in here, because it's, a lot of individuals come and they leave because it hasn't, you know, it hasn't grown in such a way that, you know, what you're speaking of. We're big and industrial because businesses move here because we're, you know, you can work and stay open all year round. And so it is, you know, it is something that we're seeing happening. And I really feel that it's happening more so through the university than it is with, you say, because Phoenix really grew with the help of ASU, Arizona State University. Now we have University
Grand
of
Canyon.
Arizona in here, and now we have Grand Canyon that's really blowing up.
Blowing up,
So it's really, but again, it's really been through the university.
Partner with those folks. Partner with them. And I agree.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
Again, the idea is to create all kinds of partnerships, become known as a partnering kind of organization for women, for, you know, minorities, for whatever the case may be, and people will think of you as that. And again, you know, as you become known for the kinds of events that you're having, again, always document, photograph, you know, use social media. All of that is to create your brand. You know,
well,
I'm sorry.
I'm saying, you know, we've got a real good branding going on now. And so we took this last 2 years to put things in order. What do we want to do? Where do we want to go? Work on the artist, work on the show. So now we've got this track record. The branding is there. I mean, this is a fabulous show. And, you know, along with that, what we're doing in these communities to help other women seems to be, you know, I mean, the press came out for the Columbus show, and they were like, this is really a really cool idea. So I agree with you, Vinny, that the time is now. You know, we had to lay that foundation. It's there. You know, yes, I've thought about doing the 501(c), and, you know, I'm even pushing it now because you're right. I shouldn't have to pay for this, and I can't afford this, and I don't think I'll be able to do it long term. But this show is lasting, and it definitely has merit, and, you know, there's movement. You know, from day one, there's been movement on this. And so I'm just going to have to just say, okay, I just need to do it. And believe it or not, I've got the papers already here in my house. I just haven't did it. For one was because that $400 was vested.
You have to find people from your planet of your kind, see if you can inspire them and ask them, say, can you give four people $100 each, you know, or eight people $50, however you want to break up that elephant. But the point of it is that, you know, my suggestion for anybody who is in a position, you know, to go to the next level, it's like, first thing is, you know, make your strategic plan, you know, set your intention. It's like, okay, what are we going to do for 2018? It's like, all right, well, you know, we're going to try to see if we can improve our funding streams. How are we going to do that? Well, let's make ourselves eligible. You know, let's look into, you know, applying. Let's, you know, figure out, don't let the money stop you. You know, again, if you have people who are really highly motivated, ask people to invest and tell them, when we get our first grant, we'll reimburse you. Can you loan us $100 for 6 months? Or, you know, what do you think? Whatever you think is real. And then, you know, put your shoulder to it and work it out. And I'll talk to you next year this time, and you'd be like, Vinny, I love you.
I love you now. I love what you're saying. You know?
We would love to have more African American artists come into Arizona because it is fertile ground at this time. And you're right, as far as going to identifying who the one is really pushing the economic development here, and we would go to them and talk to them, because I think that now we have more yeses now than we had maybe a couple of years ago.
File for your 501c3 and make your first grant application be for strategic planning. You need about $2,000. Hire somebody you know, to come in and help you do your strategic plan. You can get funding for that real easy. You should be able to get it from your city. Point of it is, you know, hire somebody professional, you know, who can help you with your strategic plan. Really look at, you know, what your challenges are and how, you know, explore how can we get over these challenges. and make a plan, because in the future when you apply to people, you can say we have a mission statement and we have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And you look
mm-hmm.
organized. You look like you know what you're doing. You're not flying by the
right.
seat of your pants, even if you are.
Absolutely.
You know, when they say candles and mirrors, you know, you make it work, you know, until it's working.
Okay.
And so, you know,
yeah.
a lot of people have marvelous ideas, you know, but, you know, we didn't go to business school. We don't know what to do. We're kind of learning on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, don't let yourself be daunted. You know, there are ways to do it. And I'm sure there are lots of people in your community, you know, who would be willing to help you if they knew that you needed their help.
That is so true. And so, you know, I agree with that. And so I've reached out
mm-hmm.
to the art commissions. I've been going to their workshops just so that
mm-hmm.
they get where they see me, they know me, you know, which
mm-hmm.
is also kind of a part of that branding. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm approachable.
Yes.
You know, this is something that is very new. And as
mm-hmm.
Celeste says, you know, Phoenix is growing in the arts. But when I first came here back
mm-hmm.
in the 80s, there was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, absolutely nothing. Cowboy art,
mm-hmm.
and that was it, you know. But it is growing right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
The mayor actually is investing. That's why I said it's a good time for me to go talk to the mayor, because
yes.
I was just nominated second year for the art
yes.
award, you know. And
there
so while I've got this, you know, I've got their attention, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you walk in, because there's so few of us here
right.
in numbers,
right.
so that means there's
right.
only a few of us in the art.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I know you see me, and so
mm-hmm.
While that's very, very fresh, you know, I'm, you know, kind of going into the art commissions, to the mayor,
mm-hmm.
and say, hey,
mm-hmm.
this is what we need. So I
can
agree
I, can
with
I,
you.
Let me give you a story.
Yes.
Here's one. When I've done it more than once. I'm going to talk about the Rain Garden Project. When I learned the story of the enslaved Africans here, I learned it, ironically, from the city councilwoman who said, oh, my God, I would really love it if you created a memorial to the slaves, is what she said. And so I said, do you have any money?
Mm-hmm.
She said, no. She said, but I do know where to get some. I said, okay, fine. So we called a local corporation. And again, it's always nice if you can figure out who's black, where you are in positions of authority, because they can direct you. And so the gentleman that we called said, you know, look at our website, go to guidelines, you know, do you fit this matrix? I made it up on the fly. I said, yes, yes. Of course, I'm talking about public art, but yes, I'm going to have an education component. And yes.
Yes,
stewardship.
Correct.
I just moved from Maryland. In Maryland, we have rain gardens. New York didn't know anything about rain gardens. I said, it's going to be a rain garden. I'm just talking. It's going to be a rain garden. And it's history, a lot of money for history, you know. And
yes,
so
it
the point
is.
Of it is that, you know, we got our first funding, and then I went to the owners of the building where I have my studio, and I asked them to give me a year of free rent. And, of course, they laughed. And I kept a straight face, and I said, no, for real, I need a year. And so they said, well, we're not that rich. I said, well, what can you do? So they said, well, you know, it's not just me. I have two partners. I said, well, talk to them. Ask them what they will do. They gave me 5 months free rent, 2,800 times five, okay? They call that development money. That means I didn't have to work at Nordstrom or someplace that I hate. You know, trying to figure out
mm-hmm.
how I'm going to plan my life in the car on the way to work, a job. And so,
right.
you know, that was the beginning, again, leveraging, trying to figure out who can help you with what you need. And so ultimately,
mm-hmm.
You know, I went to the Arts Council, and CEO of the Arts Council was like, why does everybody think I have money? And I said, I'm not coming to ask you for money. I want to bring you money. I said, I need a fiscal administrator. I tell you what, every dollar I bring in, I'll give you 20% off the top. I just need you to administrate. I am an administrator. I can do the paperwork. I need you to sign checks. And so that's how
mm-hmm.
I began the project. And then, of course, 6 years in, I said the same thing to the city. I said, you know, will you be my fiscal administrator? When I applied to the NEA, you know, will you guys, the city said, sure. So I said, okay,
oh,
I
nice.
Will do all the work. I just need you guys to be my partner. So I'm saying to you, you know, you look for partners, and then you
okay.
figure out, you know, what's in it for them, and you offer them something that maybe they don't have, like money. you know, and say, I'm not gonna wear you out. I'm doing all the legwork. I just need you to help me facilitate. And as you grow your project, mm-hmm. you know, it develops its own life. And then, of course, people think, you know, that you and they are these wonderful visionaries, which you are. But the point of it is that, you know, I've been working on the Rain Garden for 8 years. It's been 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And again, at this point, project has real legs, you know, and it's flying. You know, I went to the county last year and I said, I've got money from the city, the state, and the federal government. It's your turn. What can you do for me? And of course, they were very stoic about it. So, well, we don't have any money. So, yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. Don't say that to me. You have something. And so, of course, ironically, it turned out that they had something through the Youth Bureau. And they said, it's very competitive. I said, well, I'm willing to compete. Tell me what it is. I'll compete.
Absolutely.
For it. So, of course, mm-hmm. I'm waiting now to see if I won. I don't know. But my project fit their matrix. You know, I invited them in to see what I was doing. And when I was over there hugging and kissing and saying, this is fantastic. I'm like, give me some money so I can continue to do this. So, again, mm-hmm. you know, it's one of those things. If you have a wonderful idea that really, really benefits mm-hmm. Your community,
absolutely.
You should be able to mm-hmm. evolve it. And even mm-hmm. though in the beginning you may have to rely on other people to make it happen, at some point you should be able to do it yourself. And I think
you
are there. You know,
I
but
think
for
so
many
too.
People, mm-hmm. you know, around the country, you know, the thing of it now is that, you know, with the attacks on the NEA, you know, trying to remove the National Endowment for the Humanities, the National Endowment for the Arts, which is crazy,
right.
you know, because you don't really realize how much they improve quality of life in their community. They're not going to miss it until the well is dry. But the point of it is that just because that funding isn't possibly going to continue doesn't mean you just stop doing it. It means you need
absolutely.
More people like
mm-hmm.
you doing
mm-hmm.
things and if, mm-hmm. and find like-minded support and explain
mm-hmm.
to them in, you know, English, this is why we have to do this. This is why we need to do this. This is why you should help us do this. And you have to be very, very highly motivated, very passionate, very intense about it. You know, when you walk
absolutely.
Away, it's so intense. It's like, yeah, but, you know, you have to figure out how to make people feel you so they'll
yes.
cooperate with you.
Right, right. Very good. I think that's
well,
great,
let me,
you know.
Well, it is, a, you know, it really is. It really is. I mean, I think most of all here in Arizona is that we're all trying to push for, you know, especially because we have so many great individuals coming from other places, and so they're pushing for some of the things that they love in culture here, and that we've been so open. And I think one of the things I really love is when I'm riding on the train. Is the ideal that every train station is actually crafted by a different artist. And it's been really wonderful when you go into a train station and see, you know, who that artist is and, you know, what was the ideal behind the piece of art, or either they've done things like put up, you know, collages and mosaics, and they've used all kind of different. But at the same time, it tells the story of the community in that particular
mm-hmm.
train stop,
yes.
which I think
yes.
is mm-hmm. really great with all the gentrification that is going on here in Arizona as well,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
they care
mm-hmm.
enough to
mm-hmm.
do something about, you know, about
mm-hmm.
you know, maintaining that. But let me
well,
push
again,
both of you a little bit further.
That still falls under the umbrella of economic development. You know, we have MTA
right.
Has a national conference every year. I went many years ago, and, you know, they see art as a way, again, of drawing people onto the train to go places, you know, to make the train experience more exciting. More, and as you can see, you feel that way
mm-hmm.
about it. So, again, that's
yeah.
big business for the MTA as well. It
right,
makes people want to
so,
take the train.
But it also and goes into my next question that I like all of you to take a part in and make sure that, you know, we're identifying ourselves to our listeners, art as the storyteller. And, Benny, I'll use something that you said on that I was reading about the most powerful way to put ideals into the world. with art, mm-hmm. and I believe that's true. One of the things I love to do when I'm on the train or on the bus, because actually I love riding the train and the bus because I can do more than when I'm driving. Mm-hmm. But I love to take pictures of stuff, of art around Phoenix, and show people how Phoenix is changing and how Phoenix mm-hmm. is growing. Because as Janita said, when you came to Phoenix, it was mostly cowboy. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have all the little nice little cafes and, you know, the mm-hmm. things that we have now and the art structures downtown. And there's a few art structures I asked people, do you know where this is at? Actually, it's pretty fun. But art as a storyteller, what do you feel your art tells the story of? What is usually your focus when you're doing art? So I know we talked about the rain garden, and Janita, I know that a lot of your work points to healing women mm-hmm. in such a way. So I'd like to hear more about, you know, that focus of art as a storyteller and Patrick Wright, but as a great appreciation using Global I Am. But I'd like a little bit of information from you guys as far as that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's so good. Art is a storyteller. For me, I love storytelling. I love sharing, you know, and I utilize my art as that. And this body of work that I'm working on now, and I kind of laid the foundation of why I started the group, but I'm also one of the participating artists, and that I'm looking at art in a historical context and telling a story about women. You know, the story starts when women were visible but treated as invisible. So I'm going in and out through kind of this the storytelling of sharing with people something that, and I took something that pretty much all girls have had an experience with, is the Barbie doll, you know, and how she came into existence, you know, chronologically, and how old she is. Barbie is bigger than life, but there was a period in Barbie that we were missing. And so I'm using that, you know, that symbol. Barbie really is an icon, even though she's not real. She has her own brand. She's a powerful doll. She's a doll, but she's powerful. And so I started the history, and it kind of, you know, kind of taps into what Vinny was saying, is that, you know, do the history, do the legwork of what it is that you're trying to bring forth. And so for me, I'm telling the story. In a way, I'm telling Barbie's story and how we didn't fit into that. So through the story, I am tapping into our history, you know, Black folks, African-American folks' history. And I started creating my oversized Black Barbie dolls. This show has giant Black Barbie dolls. And, you know, I've got Black Power Barbie. And I took periods in history of when Black women had a strong voice, even though they were treated as voiceless. I've got Slave Barbie, Black Power Barbie, Hip Hop Barbie. So these are actually movements, you know, that maybe didn't start out as a movement, but I see them as a movement, and that there's a story behind the story. So now what I'm doing is I'm taking their stories, and I'm creating this body of stories about women that were visible but treated as invisible. And sometimes they were invisible to be visible. So it kind of goes in and out of that visible, invisible. But it's all about storytelling and their power and their strength. And, Patrick, you'd probably appreciate this, words. I am tatting these women's bodies with these words that mean something to us. You know, mm-hmm. people, they don't have any clothes on, but they're tatted. And it's almost like they're wearing words on their skin. So they're beautiful. I mean, beautiful. But I do see it as part of telling a historical story, my story, mm-hmm. and other women's stories.
I think the other thing about storytelling is that
for African Americans, we have been marginalized for a century when it comes to our stories being told. You know, it's grounded in the culture of this country, you know. So we have been left out of a lot of the storytelling. So there's a lot of stories that beg to be told. I was talking to you last night, and I was telling you about this public art commission that I competed for this year in Washington, D.C. There's an elementary school, the Garrison Elementary School, and they wanted public art for what they called the portals, how you enter the school. And so, you know, I'm sitting in the orientation, and the thing that perked my ears up was when they said that the Civil War Museum was up the street, and they wanted to use the artwork at the school as part of their neighborhood walk. So I'm thinking to myself, why don't they want to do that? You know, okay, so now I'm thinking Civil War Museum. Okay, so let me double check. What is the history of this neighborhood?
Right.
So it turns out that the neighborhood where this school is was the site of a contraband camp. Now, I never heard this before, and I'm very much interested and involved in you know, stories about slavery. I had never heard this before. So the interesting thing is that, you know, Washington, D.C., like many cities across the nation, abolished slavery before the whole country did. So during the Civil War, when enslaved Africans reached the city line for the district, they were considered contraband, as in it's our property now. So D.C., of course, was a swamp before the enslaved Africans removed the water, no lie. And these people were living in tents in the swamp, you know, after having traveled through the woods and God knows what else, you know, in search of freedom. And so I thought that was a really, really powerful story, particularly because no one seemed to know what I was talking about when I said contraband camp. So ultimately, you know, I won the commission, and it's always fun to hear why, you know. And so, you know, the answer was you went way back and you went deep. You know, they could stand there for a while and tell stories based on your visuals, and we like that. And again, the idea is figuring out what matters. You know, as an artist, if you're going to tell a story, the question is, you know, and this goes with just about every medium, it's like, how do you touch people in the places where you want to touch them and make them care about what you're saying? You know, so you have to really have a good understanding of human behavior, human psyche, human everything, so that you can figure out why what you're trying to say is going to matter. So, again, there's always an audience. The question is, you know, are you going to be able to reach the audience with your words, with your song, with your, you know, your painting, your sculpture, whatever medium you're using? It's like, are people going to get it? And so you have to become a good storyteller if you're going to be a good artist, because people want to hear stories. They want to know stories. They want to know what is the meaning of what you're doing.
And I think I agree with that, you know, but I think that for the most part it starts with the artist, and it doesn't matter what medium. It starts with the artist, you know. You have to do your due diligence of finding out what it means to you, and that's through research, it's through maybe interviews, whatever it is you need to do in order so that you understand how it affects you, in order for you to turn that around, be that creative soul, and have it affect other people. What that story means to you and what it means to other people, it has to be this kind of web, this connection between you and your outer you, you know. Go ahead, Patrick.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was just going to dovetail off of what you're saying, Janita, and also what Vinny is talking about. And there's a couple of components, really powerful components, to what Vinny is talking about, and also what Celeste seeks to do with her platform, with Vertical Radio. I mean, we're all telling our own story. And, you know, we keep saying it's art, but it's not even – I think it goes beyond that. I think it's technology. I think it's how the culture survives millennium after millennium, century after century, decade after decade, and I think it goes beyond who we are inside of the present. I mean, you know, I got my compunction for wanting to tell stories, for, you know, doing all the Huffington Post profiles that I do, outside of my regular work, outside of being a banker, outside of being an entrepreneur and making money that pays the mortgage and pays the utilities for my mother, who's been telling me stories since I was a little boy and telling me about kings in West Africa, whom my bloodline derived itself from. And I think that, you know, on the one hand, there's dealing as a resistance, dealing, you know, as Frederick Douglass did, as Mary McLeod Bethune did, as Harriet Tubman did, as Sojourner Truth did, and saying, Harriet Tubman, thank you so much, and saying, this is who we are, and you know, you don't define us. But on the other hand, this is how we built kingdoms. This is how we built the kingdom of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, and going beyond the narrative that's always being pushed against us, saying, hey, you know, 400 years ago there was slavery, and slaves came over from Africa. No. Astrologers came over from Africa. You know, shipbuilders came over from Africa. Home builders, empire builders came over from Africa, and they built empires over in Ghana, Mali, and Songhai. And then we proceeded to come over here and do the same thing over here, which I think is at the crux of a lot of the crisis that, that turns out in modern day conversation. So, you know, we might say artist, and in a contemporary lingo, I really think that in many ways, Vinny is the epitome of everything that can be accomplished when we recognize ourselves from our own lens, and we look at ourselves from who we are, from our own aesthetic, from our own cultural moray, rather than saying, you know, we're just artists. No, artist is king. You can go back to millennia, thousands of years inside of West African, South African tribes, Igbo tribe, Yoruba tribe, Zosha tribe, and the storytellers are the people that are not only kings and queens, but people that advise the kings and queens directly as to who the tribe is, what the identity of the tribe is. The kids sit there and sit at the knee of the storyteller, just as I would sit at the knee of my mother and listen to my family story, listen to generations and centuries of my family stories being told, and get a sense of who I am, versus watching the television, turning on, going to the movies, and then having them define me for me, which is serving their interest. So, you know, I think
there's something else that I want to say to that also, too, Patrick. I think that artists are chosen. I think that artists are born. You can become an artist, but you either are or you aren't. There's really no in between. You either are an artist or you aren't, which is, you know, why oftentimes when I meet people, they say, well, I'm not like you. It's like, well, nobody's like me. I'm not like you either. You know, but the question is, you know, how sincere are you about doing what you do? There are many of us that are more than willing to live under a bridge to be able to do what we came here to do. We know what we're supposed to be trying to do. But the challenge oftentimes is trying to figure out how to eat every day and how to get the story told. You know, that's a whole other adventure. I've been homeless. It's not nice, you know, when you're considered a genius, but you can't keep a roof over your head because you're so committed to doing what you're doing that you're not willing to work, quote unquote, a regular job.
See,
you know?
I think that goes back. I think that goes directly to the heart of a conversation that Celeste and I are having earlier this morning as we were prepping for this conversation, which the gist of it was basically, you know, since the beginning of our time in this country, in the Americas and leaving Africa, we've been expected to do everything, including create miracles for nothing. And that's the narrative. And that's actually the conversation that's being had today. You know, if you, you know, talk to any given folks that are in power structure right now, forget reparations, forget the past house 400 years ago. Well, yeah, you want that conversation to end because you don't deserve any of it because you didn't build it. You basically robbed it from people that knew how to do it, because it wasn't indentured servants that came over from London that said, let's build an empire. It was 200 years into the history of this country. Then you go to Africa, you go to West Africa, and you get people off the coast of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Ivory Coast, and you bring them over here, and you say, build an empire. We build the economies off of tobacco, cotton. In the Caribbean, we build it off of sugar. We build the structure that actually governs the world in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. It was Benjamin Banneker and his vision. Uh-huh. Rebuild the White mm-hmm. House. Rebuild, if you ever hang out inside of D.C., which I know Vinny has, and I know that Celeste has.
I have.
I have too. And Janita, and I had the opportunity to do so with my family. That place feels different. Like, it doesn't feel like California. I live in California. You walk there, you feel a sense of what's going on here. And then all of a sudden you start taking a look at the Washington Monument, which mirrors the same monuments that they have inside of Ethiopia. I don't want to get too involved inside of conspiratorial thinking because that's not what this is about. What it is about is identifying the fact that we have a mask that's pulled over our heads and identifying who we are century after century, decade after decade, and don't give up anything. Do precisely what Vinny has done. I think Vinny has done a genius job of saying, not only am I an artist, not only, you know, and that's, you know, that's a really interesting insight to say, well, we're selected by the ancestors. And you didn't say by the ancestors. You actually said that we are selected. And I think it is.
I think it's a God thing. You know, whoever runs this
it's
thing,
a calling.
It's a
calling.
Kids that he sends to do in every generation that we have things to do. And I honestly believe that a great part of what art is about is reminding us how to be human. Be a human being.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about dog-eat-dog first bite counts. It's about having feelings and having emotions and caring about each other and expressing culture. You know, every culture has art, you know. So
it does.
It's a universal language. Mm-hmm.
Vinny, I see it as that it's a calling. It will never leave
it
you. It just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And not everybody, there's many levels of artists, you know, but there are some that are talented. And you say, wow, they're good. But they may not have that calling on them, you know, that really pulls on them to do not only your art, but also to send that art out into the universe and to bring our people into that. That's a calling.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You said something earlier that made me smile. My parents, I didn't realize my parents were artists until I was, like, in my 40s because I grew up, my whole family, my family is littered with creatives. And so I grew up with artistic parents that, you know, when they wanted to make something, you know, when they were, you know, compelled
or had to make something,
they would. But if they didn't, they didn't. They didn't care, okay? And so, of course, they told me, this is, you know, me in the 70s, oh, no, you cannot go to school for art. You know, artists don't make any money until they're dead. You have to find something else to do. And so I, of course, tried that, but everything else made me unhappy. I mean, really unhappy.
Right.
You know, and at some point, I realized that I really wanted to get back to being creative. One day I woke up and realized that I hadn't painted in 7 years. That freaked me out. As a matter of fact, that's how I got to the because I was like, I have got to figure out how to plug back into the flow. It's not like, you know, when you're not educated in art, you know, when you just, quote, unquote, have a gift, you have to wait on it. You have to feel like it.
Yeah.
You know? And if you don't feel like it, you're like everybody else. You can't do it because you don't know what to do because it just kind of happens to you. And so
it does.
You know, it's interesting because
but it pulls on you. It pulls on you.
Well, I'm liking what I hear because one of the things I've always, when I'm talking to people, I'll say to them, you know, you don't just have a job, you have a ministry, you know, or you have a gift of truth.
So.
Yes. And so one of the things, I'm sitting here listening to you guys and I'm just kind of, you know, cracking up to myself because one of the things it's real, but when you have a gift like this and when you're working in it, it pushes you after a while. It pushes you to start, you know, kind of going over the distractions. And I'll share with you when you said that, I started laughing because I remember, you know, sitting here talking to the Lord one day and saying, you know, being distracted with should I get a job or you know, do I need a job, or how am I going to push this? Well, if I get a job, I do this, and how am I going to do this? And so funny, what's funny is when I started hearing, you know, the Spirit say to me when I wake up in the morning, you got food? Yeah. You got a place over your head? Yeah. You got Wi-Fi? Yeah. Okay, let's get to work. You know, and I would just start laughing after a while.
Yeah. Well,
because
voices. Again, talking to young people, we talk about the voices. I'm like, let's name them. It's like, you know, pay attention to who you're listening to in your head. Don't necessarily acquiesce to the skeptic and the critic. It's like, listen for the artist.
Right.
Listen for that voice that's not yours. Somebody in there is, that's not you. That's somebody talking to you. You know, knowing is information that comes to you. And so, you know, I've done whole workshops where we just talk about the voices, you know, and how to identify them and what do they say and how do you know which one is right and how do you know, what to do and what does the flow really feel like, you know, that sort of thing. Because a lot of people don't talk about the real process. They talk about technique. You know, it's like, no, but there's a process that happens along with the technique. Like, how do you know that it's going to work out a certain way? What makes you stay with it? Are you willing to navigate chaos to get to visual order? Like, a lot of people are afraid because they don't think they can do it, and they give up. And it's like, I'm sorry, it's chaotic for all of us. You know, it's one of those reasons why I really love social media. I started showing my work in progress. Like, let me show you what this stuff looks like in the beginning. And people are like, wow. Okay, whoa. It's like, oh, no. You have to have real nerve to navigate making art, because sometimes the process is really long and laborious, and it takes a while before it starts looking like you want it to, but you have to believe you can bring it. A lot of people don't realize that that is actually part of the process. The chaos is part of the process. And you have to be willing to endure that to get to something. And so, you know, for me, growing up, I always wanted to make great art. And so I wasted a boatload of paper. You know, my mother's like, you're wasting paper. And my father's like, leave her alone. That's how she wants to do it. Just let her do what she does. She's fine. You know, and again, you know, at some point, you know, I said to my mother, I said, well, if I make something really good, I don't want something to be on the back. You know, my father thought that was funny, and my mother thought it was wasteful. You know, and again, between the two of them, they had two different attitudes about art. You know, my father is my biggest fan. He's my bridge, because at some point he realized, oh, no, she is special. And so, you know, and I remember very vividly asking him one day to be my safety net. You know, I was hating my job, and I said, you know, I need a safety net. I didn't even ask him. I just said, I need one. And he was like, I can be that. And I said,
that's wonderful.
I'm talking about when the car breaks down, had a little 78 Beetle convertible that broke down regularly. I was like, yeah, but the car breaks down and I need $600 for heat boxes, you know, for heat in the wintertime, because it's a tin can, like a tuna can in the winter. You won't get mad if I can't give you the money back. And he said, I can do that. And, I mean, he is still, to this moment, my bridge like that. Everybody doesn't have that kind of foundation. But, you know, God does send people to you, you know, to help you, to direct you, you know, to support you in the case. You have to believe.
This is the thing.
You have to believe.
And that's powerful. That's really powerful. Because, Janita, you remember Dr. Harden, her husband, and I was going to say, when I went to get a job as an advisor at the school, and I met my college advisor's husband, and I didn't know worked at the college, and he said, oh, I know about you, you know, and he knew about me with my writing, and he said to me, he said, so what are you doing here? And I said, it's a job. He said, well, have you finished your book? And I said, well, yeah, kind of. And he said, you need to quit, and you need to go finish your book, and you don't need to get a job until you finish that book. And I was like, really? Because it's the only person that ever really said that to me. Yeah. And it got to be hilarious, because when I would come to work and we were in the same elevator, he would say, you still here? Say, yeah,
but that's
know,
so that's
then,
so true. You know,
exactly. Because the last conversation when I did quit, he said to me, "Celeste, the jobs will be here, but your gift won't." You know, he said,
that was an important thing for somebody to say to you. But you know, again, unfortunately, not everybody gets that kind of verbal affirmation. And so you either you have to tell yourself that, or it doesn't get done, and then you're like, if I woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know. You know, that's again, can you be self-motivating? Can you be self-tasking?
Yeah.
A lot of people are not. For whatever reason, the reasons don't matter. You know, but in the final analysis, you have to want to be what you say you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, say, I want to be an artist. I'm like, no, you are an artist. The question is, do you want to make art? You know,
right.
And again, it's not about good art versus bad art.
Yeah.
It's just about art. That's all.
Art.
Because,
art-making.
You know, your work will speak to someone. This is the joy of social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, early on, you know, I had somebody say to me, well, you know, are you only going to make black people? I said, well,
yeah,
if somebody
wants
to make white people, I'll make white people. But if it's up to me, and this stuff has to stay in my house, I'm making black people.
Right.
And
I've also heard that Benny. People like, well, you just do black art. And I used to say, I do art. But
I
if you want
art.
That,
now, the funny thing
if you want that, I can do that too.
No. But here's the thing. And again, this is the problem with being an African-American in America. Outside this country, black art is not considered black art. It is considered just art. I have a kajillion friends from all over the world. A bunch of them don't even speak English. In the old days, we used to have to cut and paste the translator thing. Now we have automatic translator. But people just want to talk about how the artwork makes them feel. They don't think of it as a black thing. They think of it as a human thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's
right.
The joy of getting exposed and getting out of this country. You begin to realize that not everybody feels the same way about black people as many of the people feel in this country. It's not the reality is relative. You know, so at some point I realized that I didn't have to be feeling any kind of way about, you know, not being valid because I wasn't doing something other than what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I agree with that.
Well,
you know, I spent some time over in Germany with artists that didn't even speak English, but what we did speak and how we communicated was through art. And they seemed that, you know, I brought value to them from the United States as a black woman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about the process, you know, and we shared process. That was our common ground. And they were... They didn't look like me, but we were like thinkers. You know, they were underground artists.
Well, you know what? I consider artists to be a race of people. We just haven't been categorized. I believe that artists are literally a race of people, and that the race is not qualified by color. It's not qualified by age or gender or nationality or ethnicity. It's qualified by what you do. We're from the land of brain.
Right.
We do stuff. So
yes, we are.
Right. It doesn't matter what your medium is. The first question is, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, our time is kind of running out, and I don't want to.
Oh, we need a part two.
I don't want to run out. I was going to say, we will have a part two. This is a great conversation. And I was I even planned this to be at the longest time, and I was like, we needed more time. So definitely I want a part two because this is a great conversation. It's actually going to the heart of to our spirit and the importance of heard not too long ago in a lesson, when we look at a generation and wonder why they're missing some things that we probably have in our generation, is because not enough of us were willing to take that step out and really work within our gift. And that really, really made a deep impression on me when I heard that. But I would like to say to you ladies, because we're in our last few minutes here, and Patrick, I would love for you to tell me quickly about your latest project. And I would love, definitely love to have all of you come back. But let's kind of quickly go through what your latest project is. Vinny, what is your latest project right now?
While I'm talking to you, I am working on Marvin Gaye. The idea is from the What's Going On album. So I am literally right now putting alligator embossing on his raincoat, which is a lot of work. But, you know, in the end, you know, people be like, oh, my God, he's got an alligator raincoat. Look at that. You know, and it's funny because when you look at the What's Going On album, unless you put it on the computer and look at it real close, you're going to miss the fact that that's an alligator embossed raincoat he has on. I'm very excited about this because I believe it's the first sculpture of Marvin Gaye. It's going in D.C. And then the second thing that I'm working on is a sculpture for Hartford. Walter Doc Hurley was a educator who raised hundreds of thousands of dollars to send disadvantaged kids to college. And so that's going to be the first public artwork to be commissioned of a contemporary African-American man in Connecticut. And then the other thing that I'm working on is a 12-by-4-foot bas relief called The Immortals, which is the top singers, rappers, musicians, bands, groups, whatever, of all time. A lot of them are black. And so 85 faces on a 12-by-4. Uh-huh. And then, of course, the piece that I talked earlier about, the contraband camps. And then also, too, the NEA gave me a grant to start the Two Children for the Enslaved Africans Rain Guards. This is a phenomenal year for me in terms of volume of work and the importance of the work. I'm just very excited about this time.
Wonderful.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, just a lot of stuff on the wall. Pardon me.
Oh, no, you're fine. My latest project is that now that, you know, we've got this show up and going and just kind of strategically move it around the country of who wants it, because it is an important show. It has many voices, not just my voice, and I'm very much into voice, you know, or the voiceless, you know. And so I think it has this powerful voice. We're getting rave reviews on this voice and what it is. And it really shows, I'm out to show that we are not just one-dimensional people, and we're not one-dimensional in art. You know, it's multimedia. We got some of the artists are saying some wonderful things their way, and collectively we've got this really powerful, strong show. And I know it's not anything new, but it's timely. You know, that you've got this black curator, you've got these black artists who's coming from a black aesthetic, a black consciousness, but it's beautiful. It speaks, it's just not black. And one of the things when, you know, people, I'm talking to reporters, they want to say, oh, it's a black show. And I says, well, no, it's art. We just happen to be black. You know, and so, you know, it needs to be out there in order to keep our voice out there and to, you know, to empower women. We're getting rave reviews. It empowers everybody, but the women are so appreciative, grateful. People leave out of it. They're weeping, they're crying, they're happy, whatever. You know, it's just so multi-level. It's speaking to us, you know, in many different ways. And I think it's the time is now with our political climate. I think we need to have this. And so I'm just going to keep pushing on this. And, Vinny, I am going to take some of your advice. It's been in my head, but you have inspired me to move it out of my head and move it onto that paper, you know. And, Patrick,
Be friends and feel free to call me. I would love to help
I will definitely do that. So Patrick, you've inspired me. I love your sense of history, and that's where it all starts. And so I'm going to keep doing that. There's something about these oversized Barbie dolls that I'm creating, my own Barbie, my own way, from my own voice, that is powerful. And they just loomed all over the gallery to everybody would just stop. And it's like, oh, my God, because now I'm taking her out of the context of the small little intimate white doll, and I have blew her up. Okay, so where is it taking to you now? So there's still some questions that, you know, I am answering, you know, through that work. And so I'm going to continue to do this. And at the same time, things are speeding up, you know. So it's like, oh, my God. Now, I'm a person, I still work a 40-hour job. And my mission for it, and Les knows this, we've had this talk. It's like, I'm ready to walk out, you know. And I was like, I've maybe two more years, but I've been there for a while. So I want to leave out with some of their money. you know, to help me do what I need to do. And at the same time, I keep saying I need to leave Phoenix, but there's something that says I need to stay and open up this building so that it can do all the things that I know and think it can do. So I'm looking down the road. I'm in my present creating and moving this show, but I'm looking at what I'm doing in my studio and what I'm doing out in the communities and, you know, in different states is only going to come back around to what I really want to do is speak about art, help people find themselves, you know. So it's been a good time.
Okay.
It's been a good year.
Excellent.
What a blessing. And then
Patrick.
And thank you so much, Janita, Vinny, also Celeste, for all the incredible technology on this conversation. For myself, I'm in the process right now of merging my business, the San Diego Investment Conference, into a larger group with a partner out of Newport Beach, and we're creating Global Capital Network. We've got a series of investor roadshows in the first part of December, which we're currently planning and putting together and putting a lot of energy into. I completed 2 books of poetry this year. One of which is already out. It's run by Maria Publishers out of Indiana, and it's a chapbook called Revolution. What is it? It's called Resistance, Renaissance, Revolution, and Evolution, and that's out by Maria Publishers. You can actually either purchase a hard copy or you can actually download the PDF online. But that's on MoriaPoetry.com, which is MORA. Poetry.com. There's a number of poets that are featured there. If you have resistance poetry that you'd like to have sent out to the White House, you can work with the publisher there, and he will help you publish your book. And then there is another book that I've been working on for the larger part of this year with Jakar Books out of North Carolina and Richard Krawick, Yes We Be, which will be released in February of 2018. I'm doing a series of Huffington Post profiles for which I also would love to interview Janita. And that I'd like to roll out on February 2018, just because I think that there's going to be a groundswell of pendulum movement from alt-right to alt-left. And a lot of the folks that I've been talking to are kind of feeling that as well. And then, you know, I've been working with my son, Sharkhart, who is a standout USA swimmer. He's a great student in school. He's getting published in national magazines. I'm very proud of him. He's a great track and field runner. He's only 11 years old, but he has a very strong sense of who he is and what he can accomplish. And then, I've been honored to be the husband to a very incredible woman who is, I'm just a support to her. She has a jewelry company that she's rolling out in addition to everything that she does for our family, which includes my father-in-law and I and my son. And she's got an incredible company called Shop Mombasa, for which she is rolling out jewelry and doing incredible stuff. She was featured this month in Essence magazine. And looking forward to continue to collab with Celeste on this conversation because, you know, as we all get off of this conversation and feel that we were built up emotionally, metaphysically, spiritually, I think, like I said, it's all by intention. And there is no mistakes in the universe. So, you know, everything that we're doing is, you know, really profound. And when we come together, you know, the sum of our coming together is much better than what we can just do individually. I get built up when I speak to Celeste and I work on her platform for Vertical Radio, or I get 1 page or 2 pages worth of notes that I picked up from Vinnie Bagwell on 501c3 and how simple it is to implement the spirit of what Janita's working on in her artwork for our daughters and for the young men, so that, you know, as we're going through this, you know, this period in American history, we really understand the significance of all the women who are on the phone right now and all the women inside of our greatest society that continue to sit there and uphold us and make us what we can be.
Yeah. Great. Well, I would love to work with you anytime. So.
Like I said, I would definitely love to, and I will be reaching out to have you on again because it's a great conversation. I'd love to continue. And I'll just say for our audience as we leave today that Vertical Magazine is sponsoring a book and art supply drive for Paulette Bowe in Florida and her Johnson's Ability Center. This is a young lady who goes out to the park and works with children that are, ADHD. She reads stories to them. She's teaching them how to read to their
Pierce, and she's doing Art in the Park. So if you'd like more information, you can email me at info@verticallifemagazine.com and put book drive in the subject line, and I can give you some more information. And, you know, for those who have been such faithful listeners, Vertical will be incorporating in the first of the year, and we are making some great collaborations and keeping with our goal to reach out globally and to pull in different communities across the globe, and we're really seeing that come to pass. We're also putting out a call for writers who would like to be mentors to young individuals this year at a project that Vertical is doing with our social enterprise, She's More Network and Teens Vertical Media Camp. So reach out. Again, everyone, it was a great conversation. I look forward to talking to you again. Thank you so much for being a part of Vertical today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody. And again, this is Vertical Life Magazine.